Morning. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen outlined the latest set of sanctions that the EU is proposing to impose on Russia over the war in Ukraine, including a ban on oil. Among the sanctions are bans on the importation of Russian oil by the end of this year, a ban on three Russian state-owned broadcasters, and further steps against Russian banks. But gas importation has not been included among the measures. Bill Browder is CEO of Hermitage Capital and head of the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign, which campaigns against abuses of human rights in Russia. I spoke to him a short time ago and began by asking him for his reaction to these latest EU sanctions.
Well, I think it's really crucial that this is being done. If you look at the whole war situation, we've banned and frozen a lot of Putin's savings, the central bank reserves and the oligarch money offshore. But every day, the European Union sends Putin $1 billion for the purchase of oil and gas. And every day he spends that money killing Ukrainians. And so it's really very important that we stop sending him that money. Now, it's also important to understand that this ban today is only about oil, not about gas. And oil is not the majority of what we pay Russia for. And so there's still a lot of money that will continue to flow into Russia after this ban is implemented. But I think it's a very important step in the right direction. And this now starts to hit Putin where it really hurts, because this is the money that he lives off of.
It's the sixth round, or will be the sixth round, of EU sanctions. And the five rounds so far don't seem to have had any significant deterrent effect on the Kremlin, even though we were told at the time that they would inflict very severe damage on the Russian economy. What would give people confidence that this actually might make a difference?
Well, all this stuff has made a difference. Deterrence and making a difference are two different things. Had we actually been sanctioning Putin before he invaded, so he could see that we were serious, he might not have done any of these things. You know, we've given him a free pass the last 22 years, and that was the basis for which he made the judgment to go into Ukraine. So we're not going to change his mind. He's not a guy who changes his mind. He's not a guy who compromises or backs down. The purpose of these sanctions now are effectively to bleed him dry financially. And that's all we can hope for. And every little bit helps. It's not going to stop him immediately. It may not even stop him in the short term or medium term. But we have a real responsibility to stop him from doing this war. And the way to stop him is make sure that he doesn't have the money to buy tanks and bullets and bombs. And that has to be our priority.
It's, as I said, the plan is for a phased elimination of oil imports from Russia. Does that give Putin the opportunity to find new markets? Are there other markets for their oil?
There are, I mean, to some extent, but at the same time, not to the full extent. And so this is going to cost them a huge amount of money. There's no question about it. The United States has stopped buying Russian oil. The UK has stopped buying Russian oil. Canada has stopped buying Russian oil. So the EU will stop buying it. And yeah, there's China out there. There's India. But it's not so easy. I would argue that this is very, very serious and something which is probably overdue, but better late than never.
The Russians are saying today that they believe EU countries will continue to source supplies of Russian oil from third countries. Would that be something that might happen? I mean, presumably it would represent a breach of any sanctions regime.
I don't believe that that's going to happen. The Russians are constantly trying to put on a brave face to say none of this stuff matters. Everything matters to them. Russia is effectively an oil and gas and metals country. And if we stop buying oil, gas, and metals from them, they have no more money. And yes, the Chinese can do some, but the Chinese aren't going to take over the whole thing, and they're not going to solve Russia's problems for them. Vladimir Putin has really, you know, backed himself into a corner here. And I think that now he's going to be paying the price. And it is a big price. Just because of all the bluff and bravado, don't be thinking that he's not suffering. He's suffering.
And on the question of a ban on gas imports, can you see a situation in which this war ends, the invasion ceases, without some restriction on gas purchases by the EU into Europe?
Well, I mean, it's very hard to say what will be the final thing that pushes the war to the end. to stopping. I think the main thing that's going to push this war into the end is Ukrainian military defeating the Russians. But the economics on the other side are extremely important. And so, yes, I mean, I think that as long as we keep on sending them a lot of money, they're going to continue to be able to buy all the stuff to wage this war. And so, and getting rid of the gas is something completely different than oil. Oil, you can put on, you can say, okay, we're going to buy Saudi oil, and it comes in a tanker from Saudi Arabia instead of on a tanker from Russia. Gas is different. It goes through a pipeline, and the pipeline is fixed. There are a number of countries like Italy, Austria, 100% of their gas comes from Russia. Germany, it's like 40-45%. That's a tougher thing to change. It's not something they can change in the next month or two, or even in the next year. But that's going to have to change, because Russia is a hostile regime which we shouldn't be funding in any way, shape or form.
And that was Bill Browder speaking to us earlier. I can talk now to Dr. Robin Niblett from Chatham House in London. Dr. Niblett, thank you very much for taking our call this afternoon. I mean, at this stage, there doesn't seem to be any prospect of a negotiated end to this conflict. Does that mean a prolonged conflict, a war of attrition, before there's even any suggestion that the Russians would come to the negotiating table, even if there'd be a place there for them?
Hi, Brian. Nice to be on the show. And yes, sadly, it's very hard to see a near-term resolution to the conflict. Having failed in maybe the first objective, which is to decapitate the Ukrainian government through a quick strike into Kiev and so on, they've now settled into the other plan, Plan B, which is to split Ukraine, take a much larger chunk, as we know, of the east, potentially take all of the south of the country, cut it off from access to the Black Sea. And, you know, the view would be that would certainly constitute a victory. And as the new Russian general put in charge of the forces, has said, if they could link up with a little Russian-controlled enclave in the east of Moldova, that's just beyond Odessa, then they would really be able to say, and Putin would be able to say, that he'd recreated some aspect of the Rusky Mir, the Great Russia, which he felt was split apart at the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union.
But they're a long way from even doing that, and have struggled even to secure the territory, particularly along the south, that they do control at this stage. And the support of the West, weapons, material coming in from NATO, from EU countries, which and the United States, which is upping its commitment in this regard, all of that is boosting Ukraine's ability to resist.
I think the importation of weapons in particular have obviously made a big difference to the conflict at the beginning, and potentially in being able to hold back the advance in the East, or certainly slow it down. You notice that most of the reports we're getting right now are of slow progress. But slow progress is progress. And from the Russian standpoint, they may feel that more time is on their side. As Bill Browder was just telling you right now, the thing about sanctions, they take a long time to have impact. So long as we're still buying gas in particular, to a certain extent oil for a while, we, therefore being most of Europe and other parts of the world, there is still money coming in. Now remember, no one is attacking Russian territory, Russian power stations, Russian supply lines, Russian train networks are all in one place. What Putin can gradually do is wear down and destroy the Ukrainian infrastructure, its rail system, its power system, its water networks, and so on. And, you know, he feels he's got a longer line to play on this than perhaps the Ukrainians do, despite the sanctions, and that he can keep this going for another 6 months and see who's got more patience.
And what about the war aims, if I can describe them as that, of the United States, of NATO, of other Western countries? They're presumably very much in the hands of Ukraine, Ukraine will decide when it wants to come to the negotiating table. But we've heard Western leaders talking about, inflicting significant damage on the Russian military capacity. And is that now a Western objective of all of this?
I think we have to recognize that Russia has gone from being an opponent, a rival, to being an enemy. for pretty much all European governments and for a majority of European citizens. And that means we are in a completely different zone, even to the one after the annexation of Crimea in 2014 and the initial invasion of parts of the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. So in that sense, you know, once you have a country that's an enemy, you can't talk about accommodation easily. You could have a ceasefire, you could have a negotiated solution. But at the moment, so long as Russia keeps, Russian forces keep attacking Ukraine, they're going to get complete and full backing, not just from the United States and the UK, from others as well. Now, the language about sort of pushing them back, which some members of the British government have talked about, even, you know, driving Russia out of Crimea and back to the original legally recognized borders of Ukraine, I feel that is more, for my reading, giving backing to Zelensky. If you have a maximalist position of this sort from the Europeans, mm-hmm. he has room later potentially to compromise on behalf of Ukraine. Right. What would be absolutely damaging right now would be for it to look as if governments in Washington or London or any other European capital were to be trying to be applying pressure right now on Zelensky, given the bravery and the remarkably good performance of their military forces. Right. So I feel this is very much a sort of diplomatic backing. It's not a statement of intent. It's not even a statement of expectation that you're going to be able to defeat Russia and drive them out of Crimea and out of all of Ukraine. But it is a way of putting maximalist signals onto the table so that they match the maximum signals that you're getting from Putin. And so Putin understands that he's in a really tough conflict, and therefore at some point he will have more of an incentive to compromise himself in a negotiation.
Dr. Robin Niblett, Director of Chatham House, thank you very much for that.